And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,821 of the Survival Podcast. And today we have yet another lifestyle design episode. These are some of my favorite episodes to do. They kind of sit in the middle as far as turnout on the live stream, like gloom and doom and all of that and dystopian stuff. You know, then they pile in. And then, like, when you teach people something like how to feed themselves in their own backyard, you know, you get maybe a third of that or a little bit less. And then these tend to hit kind of the middle between those two. So we'll see what the turnout looks like today. If you are new to this show and you've never tuned in with us before, give us a shot. We are 18 years running now as a podcast. So we'll be 18 years officially in June of this year. June 20th, 2008 is when we began. And we plan on being here for quite a while longer. We cover all aspects of home self-sufficiency, self-reliance, independence, and liberty. We talk about everything from guns and conventional prepping to business development, lifestyle design, homesteading, everything in between, basic preparedness, all of it. Again, we've been doing it 18 years. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I'd like to know more about fill in the blank, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Type fill in the blank, whatever you filled the blank with, into the search box. I guarantee you'll find episodes where we've covered it. And while you're here, stick around for a while. If you're on YouTube, hit the bell and hit the like and subscribe and all of that so that you can help us reach more people and get reminded when we're around if YouTube will do it, which they usually don't. Maybe hook up with us on social media on the various platforms. The one where you will always get every bit of information I send would be the Telegram channel. You can find that by going to thesurvivalpodcast.com and clicking on Get Social or the Telegram channel right there going across the bottom of your screen. If you're in the video right now, you can use that to sign up on Telegram with us. Okay, what are we talking about today? So today is we're calling the show Change What You Can Change. And this is a topic I've talked about a lot over the years. The concept itself derives from the work of Stephen Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. If you look at the thumbnail or image for today's episode, you'll probably recognize the three circles, the circles of control, influence, and concern. This is a book I discovered many, many, many years ago, long before I was a podcaster. So we're going back about 30-ish years. And when I opened the book just off the shelf at a bookstore, back when people went to bookstores, it went right to a page that was very similar to that thumbnail, except at that time, Covey had only worked it into two circles, influence and concern. It's made a dramatic impact on my life, and I hear from people with different, various struggles all the time. They can be professional struggles, personal struggles, design struggles, something as simple as design struggles on their farm or their homestead, and everything in between. But it always comes to this. People think that this concept only applies to like your emotional, spiritual support, and it does. But this is actually a philosophy of getting things done. And that's how we're going to dig into it today, maybe differently than you've heard about it before, unless you've heard me talk about it specifically before, because the majority of the bullet points in this presentation are from a presentation I did originally back in 2017. Of course, I promise this will be a completely new, updated, and different version because all I use is the bullet points in my presentation. Some people ask me, like, well, where's your script? Like, do you have a transcript of, like, the whole? I don't have a script. If you guys ever want to know what I'm presenting from, all you have to do, go look at the website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, pull up the episode in question, and pretty much even the text above it, that's just paragraphs for search engines and stuff. I am almost always presenting from nothing but where it says, join me today to discuss and down. Those bullet points, that's where everything comes from. So I try to keep the show fresh, and I think by doing it that way instead of scripted nonsense, we get that. All right, so what? Yeah, unscripted, absolutely, Soma, right? Unscripted. It's always unscripted. It's not unplanned, but it is unscripted. I think it's not really, like, why is it me if it's scripted? If it's going to be scripted, I could just type it all in and let an AI unit read it to you, right? I could even train it to use my voice and you'd think it was me. The only reason you tune into something like this is so that you can not only gain the base information, but gain the perspective of the individual. And I don't think it's genuine if you're just reading a script. That's just my opinion. Anyway, before we get into all of that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today is Start9. Private servers. This is where you can get a little big box. You put it in your house and it does all kinds of things for you that right now you're probably relying on third party cloud services to do. Now, the thing about the cloud, there's no such thing. There is no cloud. It's not up here. Like, Cackles said famously one time, there is just somebody else's computer that you have your data on, that you have your information on, that you have your password management on, that you have your ability to message others on, which means somebody else controls it, they can spy on it, they can leak it. They serve actually as a weakness in your security where people think they're more secure that way. You're actually less secure because if I'm breaking into Dark Horse's server at his house, all I can get is his information. If I break into like one of Amazon's servers, or I break into Google's servers, or I break into something like, I don't know, like the text messaging services of a major carrier, I can get the data on millions of people. I can get millions of dollars worth of data. So Start9 is not just incredibly secure. It's also secure through obscurity, as in people don't know where to look for it, where to find it, or who's got it. And you can do all kinds of great things. So run your own Bitcoin node, run your own Bitcoin Lightning node, act as your own payment gateway. So that's kind of all in the Bitcoin cryptocurrency space. But you can do other things like send end-to-end encrypted messages to people that you let into a group that no one else can even see that it exists, let alone decrypt it. You can store your data, access your files from anywhere in the world, including like all the way on the other side of the world across Tor, totally encrypted. You can access all your data, all your information. And if you can install applications on a phone and then configure and use applications on a phone, which all of you do, you can do this. Plus, they'll give you some help ramping up if you need it from one of their experts. Next up today is JM Bullion. JM Bullion has been our sponsor since 2012. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? 2012. That is 14 years as a sponsor. They have taken good care of folks in all that time. They have better pricing than the, you know, companies you hear advertising on the TV like Monex, Apmex, Lear Capital. And all three of those companies have asked for this spot as a sponsor on the show. And I've told them no. And the primary reason I've told them no is I'm talking to some 15th level tier person in marketing in those companies, where when I'm talking to this company, I'm either talking to the president or his right-hand guy. And that makes all the difference if there's ever anything that needs to be fixed. They have better pricing and they give you a discount if you're an MSB member, and all their orders ship free. I have been recommending about 10% of your net wealth in 5 to 10% of your net wealth in silver and gold for 18 years now. That recommendation has not changed. And for the past 16 of those 18 years, I have been, 14 of those last 16 years, I have been recommending JM Bullion for very good reasons. With that, let's go ahead and get on into it today. I want to talk to you guys again about kind of the impetus for this particular episode, focusing on what we can change and where we're coming from. We're going to start out with, this is a fundamental pillar to lifestyle design. And so I want everybody listening today to understand that lifestyle design isn't tedious and boring. And I want you to understand what the only alternative to actively designing your life is and why that's horrifying, which should make it immediately interesting and immediately important to you. And generally, when you find things important to yourself, they stop being tedious. They start being something, hey, if this is really important, I need to do this. And then it becomes interesting because since it's a design of your life, it's about you. And seldom do people find things more interesting than they do themselves and their own interests and what they want. So the alternative is, and this is terrifying when you think about it, your life has been designed already. If you are a passive participant in a life, even if you make minor decisions like where you go to school, what degree you get, et cetera, your life has been designed. It's known as social engineering. It's also known as central planning. And this is why life insurance companies are able to exist and make a lot of money doing what they do. Think about what a life insurance company does. They say, okay, this schmo over here that makes 50 grand a year for this small amount of money every year, if he kicks off and dies, we'll give his dependents $500,000. And a lot of people die. And yet the life insurance companies don't just make money. They make money hand over fist. They never lose any money. They're one of the most highly regulated industries in the country. Very, very efficient. And they're able to look at a person and ask a few questions in general, like very basic medical exam. You're not going to kick over tomorrow. How old are you? What do you do? Do you do any high risk activities? What's your educational background? What's your job? What's your income? And with that, they can say, based on this, plus what the CDC tells us, this guy's likely to live to X year, but the likelihood he'll die at each tier below or above that is this percentile. And on any individual, there's always, you know, like the bug in the works that can all go to shit and they have one loser. But if they have one loser for every 1,000 winners, they're good. And in general, their guesses are incredibly good. And again, they're not specific. This guy will die at 84. Like the odds this guy will be dead by 84 are 98%. But the odds this guy will live to be 68 are 98%. And then variances in there, and then that factors into the price and then how to manage that money to make sure that there's enough there to pay that guy off. What does that have to do with lifestyle design? How the fuck do you think they know that? How do you think they're able to do that shit? Because the outcomes in general at the macro are known, because the entire system has been designed that if you're at this level in the class system, you have this access to these things, and you've chosen this path through there, then this is likely where you're going to end up. Which means, as I said, your entire life is already designed unless you take an active role in redesigning it to your own goals. Do you think that anybody that took part in that planning said, I really care about Second Light Farm. I really care about Joshua 511. I really care about Top W Cone. And I really care about Dark Horse. And I really care about Long Road Farms. And I want to make sure that I'm doing the best job of designing their lives in a way that is in the best interest of those people. You really think so? Or do you think that each party that takes a part in this centralized planning scheme is doing their job based on what their overseers want for them, and those people are doing what their overseers want for them? In other words, control. Governments, whether they be totalitarian or even very libertarian and everything in between, the primary thing that they're concerned about is stability of the power base and the growth thereof. And this requires a constant known of the spectrum of your subjects, your citizenry, et cetera. Without that, you can't have that planned knowns, and you can't set systems up that prevent the villagers from burning down the castle. So that's their goals. It's not even necessarily the case that they're being malevolent. It is just where the incentives for those types of people lead them. Charlie Munger was always on about incentives. If you want to understand a system, and specifically you want to understand why it's giving you results that you don't like, follow the incentives. And that's what their incentives are. So we know their incentives are not to make sure that any of you guys get exactly what you want, just that everything's peaceful, right? If another way to look at it, you know, they don't care that you protest as long as you go home and pay your taxes or spend the welfare check. Either one of those is fine with them because they're both knowns and they're both controllable. So the minute you kind of go, I'm just going to go through life. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to work hard, come home, hug my kids, and do my best. You've just consigned yourselves to whatever they want for you. And my bet is some of you need to take a very, very highly active role to get what you want out of your life. And some of you just need to take a little bit more control than the average person to get far away from what you would be destined for to what you really want. And how much of an active role and how much sacrifice is all dependent on your own goals and desires. But I know this, with a completely passive approach, everything gets screwed up, especially your brain, because humans are not made to work this way. Your brain is a computer. It's a self-learning algorithmic computer, and it requires learning daily. It needs active programming daily. And when there is no active programming for you, other what we would call passive programming mechanisms, like with propaganda that I talked about earlier this week, it becomes the default. And you wonder why people are so screwed up. You wonder why people make definitive claims of things they have very limited information on and use a catchphrase to justify it. Because it was designed that way. So my question for you today as we go forward from here, do you like that? Do you want that? Do you want to be somebody's bitch? Or do you want to be the captain of your own life? It's your choice. And then we also need to understand influence versus control. From the original Stephen Covey model of, the original model was you just had two circles. I like to call them spheres. I think that makes it like in an image like the thumbnail today, it's a flat image because it's hard to show what I'm talking about as a sphere. But it really isn't a circle. It's really a sphere because it's everything surrounding you, 360 degrees around you. And the original model by Stephen Covey was there are things you have influence on. There are things that you, when you do something, there is some level of reaction in a chain, and that circle is relatively small compared to most people's circles of concern. Circle of concern, everything in that sphere of concern is things that bother you, things that you care about, things that you think are important, things that are important, but you have no control over. Most of the stuff on the news, right? And it can be anything from deadly serious things like warfare somewhere in the world, right, or human rights abuses somewhere in the world, to something mundanely stupid and moronic that I don't even understand how people care about it, but like the sex lives of celebrities. These are all things you don't control. And what Susan in accounting thinks of your dress or your shoes, right? Like you don't really have any control over that. And nor should you, because that would deny those other people control over the things they have sovereign control over, their opinions, their views, their thoughts, their actions. And so Covey kind of divided into that, and then he simplified it to that that effective people spend 90 to 95% of their time doing things inside and focused on things inside of that circle of influence, and that by doing so, that influence actually grows, where the majority of people spend their time in that circle of concern. That's what they let lead their thoughts, their actions, their deeds, their mindset. And because of that, their circle of influence actually collapses, or it stays where it is, but it doesn't grow. I added in my own teachings, because I've taught this for even longer than I've done a podcast in different, like when I used to be a speaker and things like that back in the day. And I added, but I have since realized, like, I'm not the only one that did this. I don't even know if Covey did this himself in, like, some second edition or something. I added another circle further in, control. But I've seen enough people's PowerPoint decks, and I'm not the source of this. Like, this is an obvious extension of this original idea. Control is where you actually have full 100% control. Influence is where you have some effect, but you don't really have control. Meaning, if I tell a bunch of people a thing, I spread my influence through my podcast. After doing the podcast for 18 years now, the influence is fairly large, but it's still limited. I really hope no one that listens to the show, no matter how regular, how long-term, just because I said something, you take it as fact for yourself, implement it in your life, and do it with no questions. Right? You still are the decider for your own life. And that's what I want for you to be, right? That's the one thing I want you to always do that I say, which is, trust me when I say I want you to, in the end, make the decision for yourself. Okay? And because that is an influence thing. And the responsibility of having influence is to be considered of what that influence can do and what happens after you ring the bell, because you can't unring it. Okay, like some influencers that are putting people, they call it on blast, and destroying people's lives who never really did anything to them just because they can. That's bullshit, right? You have to have responsibility with your influence, whether it goes three houses over or three countries over. You have to be responsible with it. But control, that's part of being responsible with your influence, right? You control what you say, what you do, and how you put that information out. But you also control when you get up in the morning, you know, Do you do a little bit of exercise, or do you drink coffee and eat a donut? That you have 100% control over. The clothes you wear, you have 100% control over. The amount of books you read, you control that. The amount of books you don't read, you control. Which books you read, you control. Whether you work on yourself or not, you control. Whether you exercise or not, you control. Whether you start building the business you say you want or not, you control. Whether you quit at 3 today or put another 2 hours of work in, you control. Whether you volunteer for extra things at the office or you do not, you control. And sometimes volunteering for extra things is what you need to do. And sometimes if your future is not in that place, it's what you need to not do. I can't decide for you. That's why it's your sphere of control. And that's really what we're focused on today. Not even your influence, what you actually control. You don't control what your adult child does. Okay, your kid has grown up. They're now an adult. I don't like to even term adult child. Your adult offspring, right? Your adult offspring who lives 12 miles away, has their own house. You don't control what they do, but you do have influence, but you have control over how you extend that influence. It's your responsibility if you really think they need to hear something to put it in a way, in a format, and with a tone that makes them receptive to it. It's not their responsibility to listen to your bullshit just because you're their parent. And if that's true of your kids, think of how much more true that is of everybody else in your world. So that leads us then to the wisdom of accepting what you can't change. And what I opened the notes for today's show with is the Serenity Prayer, right? Which is a big part of like 10-step programs and stuff like that. But if we drill down the line that most applies and we take people's religion out of it, because not everybody's religious, not everybody believes in God, and just drill it down to this point from that Serenity Prayer, it's basically accept what you can't change and change what you can. The second part is the most important part. To change what you can. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of things that you literally cannot change, but you can change how you react to them, how you respond to them. Because the response is not always, well, there's nothing I can do. Let it be. That is the response to a lot of things, to a lot of things. Is this thing in some way affecting you? If the answer is, you care about it, but the only reason it's affecting you is because you're choosing to let it affect you. It's some shit that happened, you know, halfway around the world, and you're not actually being asked to do anything except you don't like it. Yeah, I get, you know, morality, and I get empathy, and I get sympathy, and I understand. But in the end, you focusing on that doesn't change anything for anybody. You don't have some moral obligation to sit around being miserable about something that's happening that you can't do anything about. It doesn't benefit the people that it's happening to, and it certainly doesn't benefit you. And now you're actually robbing the world of what positive impact you could have. Yeah? Pretty simple, right? But if it is something that you cannot change, a government restriction, and that government restriction exists in as an obstacle in something like a business you want to build, and I would build this business, but I can't because insert excuse here, government says this. My next question for you is, so what are you going to do about it? Well, you just said I can't change that. There's some restriction. It's fairly high up in the government. It's not like a local thing where you can just move a block or something, right? This is a fairly obnoxious obstruction. That's not going to go away anytime soon. Okay, Jack, with that, there's nothing I can do. Bullshit. There's always something you can do. Maybe it is as simple as moving yourself to a place where you can do what you say you really want to do. Maybe it's moving the business as an entity there, which can be done with, in some cases, just paperwork. Or maybe it's reformatting your business plan so you can comply with the restriction and designing as much around the restriction as you can and complying with the restriction where you can't. In the words of Jeff Lawton from Permaculture, right? The more restrictions placed upon a design, the more eloquent the final design if the designer is good at his task. And so how good will you become at lifestyle design to design around and within the constraints of the things you can't change? Because what I find is the vast majority of time that somebody says, I want to build a business. I want to do a thing, whatever, even if it's not a business, I want to do a thing, but I can't because insert thing about government here. There is almost always a way to comply with it or get around it. And what you're saying is I want it to be easy and that's hard. So now I don't want to do it. Okay. That's a design decision too. It's just a negative design choice. Or maybe it's a positive design choice if you find something else to do. And what I mean by that is a lot of people, because they have not yet figured out what they really want, they latch onto a broad, nebulous idea. I want to be my own boss. Do you? Have you actually done the work to find out what that means, what that's like, how much work that really is, how much effort that really is, how hard it's going to be in the beginning, and how long it takes to get to the point where it was totally worth doing it and you would do it again? Right? It's not always easy. So unless you really want that, then when you're looking for those excuses, maybe those excuses are because you know that's not what you really want. Or you haven't zoned in on it enough to know what that is yet. So you're not motivated enough to power through those obstructions. That's something only you can decide. But the big dangers are really not identifying what can be changed, because this leads to a life of mediocrity, mistake, and misery is where it leads, straight into it. And what I mean by that is whenever you look at something and say, this is in the way, and you know the thing itself is unchangeable, it's a mountain. You know, short of enough explosives to level a country and a fleet of giant machinery, I can't move the mountain. So the mountain is there. It's permanent. It's a 10 on the scale of permanence. Okay. But your location relative to the mountain is not permanent at all. It's only as permanent as you allow it to be. That is your choice. You control the other side of the variable. And then you have to decide, is the change necessary to get what I say I want worth the sacrifice to get that? Or is it not? And if it's not, that's fine. Now figure out something that is. And if we don't always say to ourselves, okay, but how do I get around this? How do I get past this? If you don't use that most powerful word there is in the programming of the brain, how, we are in incredible danger of having a life that when we look back at it in our twilight years, we regret. That's something I don't want for anybody in this audience. That's why I do shows like this. So here's seven areas to identify the things that you can change. Number one is your approach to other people. This is what I call your social health. These are all actual aspects of human health, total holistic human health. And so you can't control another person. You can influence them. But often the more you try to influence them, the more resistance you foment in them, right? You foment massive resistance when you push against somebody. And the people we think we have the most influence over are actually most subject to this. Your adult son or daughter who's in their 30s and has kids of their own now doesn't want the advice from you that they didn't ask for. And when you give it to them, what they hear is you still being a parent of a child instead of their parent who is now looking at them as their contemporary and their equal. So even where we have influence, if we push too hard in a known point of resistance, we actually make the resistance more powerful. So the only thing we control in that variable is us. Every human we have a relationship with, the only thing we control is us. We cannot control how they respond to what we do. We can identify certain things that make them more aggressive or more passive or more willing to work with us or less likely. And then we can modify our behavior if we think they're worth it. That last part's important, isn't it? This isn't just getting everybody to get along with you. Like, Do I want this person involved in my life? Do I need this person? Am I required to have this person in my life? Then, you know, with certain answers there, I'm going to modify my behavior and my interactions with them. And sometimes that is minimize those interactions. Sometimes it's that simple. I've talked to people that in their workplace, they have this person and they're the big problem. Okay. Do you work for them? No. Okay. Do they work for you? Like, are you their boss? No. I'm having a hard time understanding the problem already. Cause this isn't fifth grade. You're not there to all go out and play pen together or the sandbox and shit, right? Chase each other around on the playground. I already don't know what your problem really is. Like, are they somewhere in your workflow where their lack of work is obstructing your ability to complete your tasks? Because if that's so, then carefully with the right diplomacy, that's a management issue. That's probably y'all's boss's issue, right? If you're coworkers and that. But most of the time, it will turn out that this person just simply exists at the same place this other person exists when they're working, and they don't get along. Don't fucking talk to them. Don't have anything to do with them. And do not speak about them to anybody else at that job place. That's something you control. Don't talk to your friend who really is your friend and not their friend about what you don't like about that one over there when you're on break together, not just because somebody might overhear it. You have no idea how quick that third party is going to run back and say something to somebody else, and they're going to say it to the original party, and it made everything worse. All you got to do is nothing. It's amazing how hard it is for some people to fucking do nothing. They look like they're doing nothing all the time, but they're actually doing active things that actually make their situation worse. They don't do that shit. Or it may be, you know, that they work for you. Okay, then you're not doing your job as a leader. Now, there are people that eventually, and I did a lot of it, you got to cut them loose. But you should be counseling, mentoring, and developing that person and sending a clear message at the same time. This is the standard. Here's the how far away from that standard you are. Here's the things I need to see you doing to reach that standard. And if we can't get you to that standard together, then you don't need to be here. And you'll have to change that tone to fit the reality of your situation. There's places where you're that person's boss. It's really hard to get rid of them anyway. There's places where you can get rid of that person like that. It's not always about, like, are you the most important person in the company? It's how does the company manage things? When I was in telecom running crews, if you were sent to me as a temporary worker, I could say I didn't like the way your nose looked that day and send you back to the office. You weren't necessarily fired, but you weren't coming back to one of my jobs. If you were an employee, I would have to counsel you twice. And then after I counseled you a second time, if there was another infraction, and this had to be in writing, then I could submit that third infraction along with recommendation to terminate you to my boss, who would submit it to his boss, and then him and HR Karen would decide if you got fired or not. Totally different situation. Same company, same position. So you always, to be aware of what you need to change about how you interact with someone, you have to be aware of the context of that situation. How about your approach to recreation and fun? A totally different thing, isn't it? I told you there's several areas we're going to. This is your emotional health. I talk to people all the time. Well, I love fishing. Really? When's the last time you went fishing? Man, it's been like a year. Well, why not? I'll work. Wait a minute. Do you do anything other than work? Are you literally like getting up, working, and like all you do is eat your meals, keep working, and go to bed? And I got all these other things going on. Okay, so either the things you're doing, you actually enjoy more than that one thing you say, or you're not managing your time properly to make sure that you make that part of your life. And insert whatever you want instead of fishing. Hunting, hiking, gardening, building model cars. I don't know, whatever it is for you, right? Traveling. Like, if you're going to have control of your emotional health, you have to take control of the things you do in regard to developing your emotional health, which a lot of that is outside of work. Because work's a given. Work's going to happen. Whether you work for yourself, run a company, or just an employee, that's going to happen. Even if you don't have a job, if you are, you know, a stay-at-home parent, you still have like these things that you have to do in the home to keep the home operational and running. That's your work. what's beyond it. As much as I'm about winning in your career, winning in your business development, winning as leaders, I believe in that aspect of health too. And so that has to be defined, managed, set times, budgets, and treated like work until you're doing it. And what I mean by that is when you say, hey, I love to fish and I haven't done that for like 2 months and it's a good time of year to do it, then you need to look on your calendar like you're looking for a place to place a meeting within the constraints of what's reasonable and carve out a timeline. And then you have to treat that like a business operations procedure up until ding, 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 kind of pick my shit up, throw it in my truck and go fish. At that point, it's fuck off time because you designed it that way. So you're entitled to it. And you're never letting it hurt what all the other important things in your life are. You're just making it important too. You control how you approach that. Your boss that made you work Saturday doesn't control what you do with your Sunday. Well, I have to go to church. You control that. Go to church. If that's what's important, then you can go after. You can go in the morning. You can go in the evening, right? Maybe your boss did make you work Saturday 2 weekends in a row, but does he make you work every Saturday? If so, maybe you need to have a conversation with your boss or you need a new place to work if that's important to you. What is the most important thing to you at the time, but always design in some form of emotional health building, which is about recreation, entertainment, and things like that, and fun. And that is not sitting binging shows on Netflix. You can do just about anything you want with that time, but if you find yourself either doing that or doom scrolling, you need to get some other shit in your life. And you control that, not me. How about your approach to employment and business as a whole? This is what I call your productive health. Healthy humans, people that are physically, emotionally, and mentally healthy, feel productive. And they feel like they're going somewhere. You know, as diverse as something like as reasons that people commit suicide is, when you drill down into all the instances of research that's been done on it, it always comes down to this. The person is miserable and can't see ever being less miserable than they are now. And it's that sense of hopelessness that says, well, then what's the point? And one of the ways we avoid that is productivity, and not productivity for the sake of productivity. We are not a fucking a battery. Right. The matrix is maybe an accurate description of how we're being managed and controlled, but it's not an accurate description of how we're supposed to be. We are not just a part in a machine that can be easily swapped out and replaced. We are individual thinking, spiritual beings, and productivity is one way that we express that. So if you're productive in your work, then you have the potential to move up in your work or advance in your work. And there are people that say, like, look, bro, in my work, these people are actually doing lifestyle design and maybe doing it very well, by the way. In my line of work, I have reached the threshold of where I want to be. I don't actually want to move up any further. You know, examples, real world examples that I know of. I know police officers that have been very high level administrators years ago. They actually like to patrol. They might become a patrol sergeant. But they do not want off patrol. They don't want a desk. Even when they're older and they're in their twilight years, they'd rather be the old sergeant that pulls up on the and like just keeps the ruffian troops in line than be in an office, you know, maybe doing something as a disciplinary tactic to them after the fact. They'd rather be out talking to people and engaged in the community. And you can think of hundreds of various careers like that, that there's a certain progression that person doesn't want. For my wife, it was pretty simple. I don't want to move any higher than this. When I clock out at the end of the day and I go home, I don't hear shit until I ring back in the morning. That was her choice. And very well explained. It wasn't an excuse. It wasn't like, since I can't move any higher, I'm going to say this. And that's what you have to be careful of there. Like, as long as you're true about that, and then you do the other things we're talking about today, you have a very deeply fulfilled life because you're giving less of it to your career than someone else. not because they're better or you're better, because you've prioritized one thing and they've prioritized another, and that's called liberty, my friends. That's actual freedom and actual liberty. And that's why this is actually more a liberty discussion than a lifestyle design discussion, because until you realize that, you don't understand how important it is to you. This is the only way to be free, is to control your life. If somebody else controls your life, you're their slave. If they control a portion of your life, you are a fractional slave. What do you want to be? Completely free? A fractional slave? Or a total slave? All of this has a lot to do with that. Then we have your approach to knowledge and skills. What you learned that you didn't know yesterday. What you can do that you couldn't do last week. Your approach to that, right? I call that your educational health. Like I said, your brain literally requires new information. That's why you can only sit still and think of nothing for so long. Meditation is great, but if you've ever done it and you try to get into that completely passive mental state for even a brief period of time, you know it's difficult. You get into that state and then your mind starts drifting. I really need to do the laundry. Oh, nope. Focus on my breathing. In and out. Focus on my breathing. In and out. That report is due. Yeah. Because the mind, when it sits in that state, and it's good for it to sit in that state for a period of time, but when it sits in that state indefinitely, it literally just starts grabbing shit. That's why it takes discipline to prevent it. So if you're not actively choosing what comes in, then your mind will take whatever's passively available and process it as though it's important, which means that most of what it's processing is bullshit, because most of what will come in is bullshit that doesn't matter, that's outside in that sphere of concern versus influence. So we want to be really strong with having something driving, I learn something new every day, and I can do something a little bit better or do something I couldn't do weekly, minimum monthly on the skill development front. Something, anything, doesn't matter what it is. And the older you get, the more fucking important this is, by the way, boomers. Okay? When you get to that point where you're not willing to challenge yourself to be able to do something today that you literally couldn't do a week ago, that's when you start phoning everything in life and you just coast to the end and wait to die. If you're fogging a mirror, your job on earth isn't done yet. That doesn't mean you have to work until your last day of your life like a dog. But, you know, when you get to a point where you don't have to put all the work in anymore, then take the time and the energy and do something for yourself with it. That's what I'm saying. That's your educational health. And then your approach to giving back and charity is something else you control. I call this your contributory health. I think it's really important that we value ourselves, and one way we do that is to see that we are of a value to someone else. This is a thing that a lot of people struggle with, and they call it empty nest syndrome, right? Like parents, especially if you have more than one kid, like one kid is hard, but two or three where you were, you know, kind of juggling like the different ages, especially like you got like a boy, girl, boy. The oldest is a boy, the middle is a girl, the youngest is a boy. Maybe there's 8 years difference in between the boy and the two boys on the other end, and the other one's kind of right in the middle or closer to the older one. And so you have this whole process you go through, and at some point the kids have activities at the same time, and mom's taking one there and dad's taking the other one there, and then they all get back in, and their whole life becomes this evolving process like that. And then all the kids grow up, cradle in the cat, boom, and then they're out. And then mom and dad look at each other and go, we don't even know each other. What do we do? I don't know. And they sit on opposite ends of the couch, scrolling bullshit videos or something, and thinking of someday in the past, meaning they're watching things that they can't see themselves actually doing, but they remember when they could see them doing, and now they're trying to pretend they'll do that someday. And as crazy as it sounds, one of the biggest ways to break that isn't to go do something just for yourself, but to go do something for somebody else. because then you realize the inherent value that you still have, whether it's because you're dealing with that because the kids flew the coop, or whether you're dealing with that because you just retired, or whether you're dealing with that because your role in your work has shifted to a more supervisory role in your seniority. And your company is one of those decent companies that's going to keep you around till retirement, but your workload is half of what it used to be. Believe it or not, that still happens in some places. In any event, at any point that you have like this extra time on your hands and you don't know what to do with it, seeing what you can do for somebody else is a great way to increase the that contributory health part of your lifestyle. It doesn't always have to be charity. It doesn't always have to be building wheelchair ramps with a Rotary Club. It can be finding someone around you in your orbit, maybe even at work, 5 tiers below you, and you look at that person and say, he or she just has something. I see the kid I was in that person and saying, hey, let's talk. What are your goals here? What are your goals in your career? And when you first do that, you're going to get the deer in the headlight look because you're like big boss, even though you're not really their boss. And they're like, they think they're being evaluated from a critical standpoint. Go ahead and let them feel that way a little while. See if they're worth it. If they can't fight through that, they're not worth it. But if they can and you identify, maybe that's somebody you mentor. You know, maybe that's somebody that occasionally you just say, hey, look, based on our discussions about what you want out of your life, here's a book I think you should read. I cannot tell you how big a deal that is. I can't tell you how developmental that is for that young person. Unless you've experienced it, then you already know. So even if you never experienced it, you can still be the guy that does it. But I'm telling you, when somebody's several levels above you in a company and they and you realize, hey, that person saw something in me, they took time to spend with me, they're not in my shit, they're not on my ass, they're not the guy writing my employee review, they're not even the one reading it. But they gave me this book, and when I read this book, it had certain impacts on me. I'm worth it. And feeling like you're the person that makes somebody else have that, that is incredibly motivated to everything else in your life that you do control for yourself. So again, that's your contributory health. Then I believe you have to have an approach to meditation, contemplation, prayer, affirmation, fill in the blank. On some level of mental, spiritual, mind-body connectivity management. And I call that your mental health. Mental health gets a bad rap, mainly because we have so many mentally ill people running around who are being told they're not mentally ill. But we don't control that. We can talk about it. We can be aware of it. We can see what it means to us. But in the end, all we control is ourselves. So we shouldn't let the term mental health be some sort of like detrimental term, right? If I said your cardiac health, you don't immediately think negative. You think my cardiac health is great. I run marathons, right? So when I say mental health, you could have very positive mental health. Does that mean it's optimum? Is your mental health optimum? You know, is your cardiac health optimum? Nobody gets upset about that question. Is your physical strength optimum for your body size, right? Is it optimum? Not world class, not you belong in the Olympics powerlifting, but like for a person who is a 180-pound male, do you have the physical strength that you would expect, you know, a little bit better than average at least, right? Do you have that? Nobody gets upset. So is your mental health that way? If you have great mental health, it doesn't mean that you're never sad. It doesn't mean that you're ever depressed. It means that those things don't control you. It doesn't mean that you ever don't get to a point where you're just like, fuck, I don't want to do this today. And I just feel like not. But the person with positive mental health works through that and then not only does it anyway, but does it great without resentment and is able to at some point realize the fact that I have this to do is a positive. It's a blessing. Many people don't have this thing to do. This job that I hate that pays really well, many people would kill for the job that I have. So until I can change the situation, either by changing my role in the job, the job's role itself by modifying it, because that's That's just something I should do a show on, because I was a master at that shit. I was hired to do this, but I really wanted to do that. So eventually I convinced the people I worked for that what I wanted to do is what they wanted me to do. That's a mastery level coursework there, though. But you have to have time that you're taking care of that mental health so that when you hit those hard times, because you will, you can not only deal with them, everybody on some level, if you're still alive, you know, if you didn't eat the barrel of a gun, you handled it. But did you handle it well? And after you handle it, did your position in the world become stronger or weaker based on the way you handled it? That's a mental health issue. And that comes right down to, do you take the time to treat your mind and your spirit the same way you should be treating like your body and your physical health? In other words, it has to be exercise. One of the things I do every morning as part of my morning routine is take some time to just think about things that I want, how I might obtain them, how it will feel once I have them, what I'm willing to do to get there, what I'm not willing to do to get there, and then kind of getting to a point where I imagine myself there, already having it done, and then contemplate how I feel in that state, that accomplished, confident, calm state. And the more time you spend focused on making yourself experience that, and it can be through accomplishment, and it can just be through gratitude of what you already have, then the more you can recall that state. That's the most powerful thing you can do for your mental health. So now I'm in a stressful situation. Since I'm not going to die in the next 5 seconds, it's not like a car's coming at me. That's stressful too. Now I need to be in instinctive reactive mode. Assuming I have time for thoughtful reactive mode, then I really want to get into a mode where it's accept the thing is happening, define the problem, come up with a solution and act on it. All right. That is response versus react. That's response mode versus react mode. React is, I go to smack you and you move your head out of the way so that I don't hit you. Right move in that situation. Response mode is more like you accept, and this can be done even just this quick, even faster once you train yourself. You accept that it's happening, and that means that by accepting it, you might actually come up with a better solution than just moving your head back, placing yourself off balance so I can kick you in the chest and knock you on the ground as you lean backwards. So the response mode is actually more, not less powerful, even if it's incredibly quick. But most things don't need to be incredibly quick. And so if we have put ourselves into this state of being content, being grateful, and being calm, and a conflicting situation comes up, and we just say for a second, just for even 2 to 5, 10 seconds, remember what that feels like, put myself in that state, now what am I going to do about the situation? The situation hasn't changed, but you have. And it's amazing how much quicker and more accurate your response is. You don't respond from emotion and anger. You respond from logic and reason. And emotion is only channeled where it then makes sense, because sometimes emotion belongs there. That's solid mental health. You also control your approach to exercise, diet, and your overall activity. I guarantee you, not one of you, I don't care what fucking excuse you make, there is nobody that comes to your house with a gun in the morning, presses it to your forehead and shoves 3 Krispy Kreme donuts in your mouth. That does not happen. It does not exist. There is no one that when you say, fuck it, I didn't get a really good workout in today, but after dinner, I'm going to walk outside my door and walk around the block 3 times and sit down. There is no one that when you walk outside the door runs up to you with a fucking baton and fucking smacks you in the knees, knocks you out, and throws you back in your house. That shit is a fantasy that does not happen. So when you say, but I can't, you are full of shit. You're full of shit. But I tore my leg and it hurts and I have to rest my leg. Sure you do. I agree with you. You should rest your leg. Does your leg prevent you from reaching down and picking up some dumbbells while you're sitting in a chair and doing some curls? No? Then why aren't you doing that? Then why are you doing it? Is there nothing you could do? Like if you're like in the movie where you have the cast on all your limbs, with the bars holding up your arms and shit and pulleys and shit in a bed. Okay. I'll give you that. They get you problem, but you could be working on all this other shit then. You bet. So if you physically cannot exercise, then do something else. But it's unusual that that's really the case. So you should have a minimum amount. Let's see the foreign word there, minimum. Minimum acceptable amount of physical activity per week. You should monitor that. You should ensure that you hit that. And if you don't, you need to modify what you can modify to make sure that you do. No one, again, shoves Krispy Kremes down your belt, into your belly. No one goes and gets a whole bunch of Twinkies, throws them in a blender with cream, makes a slurry, takes a funnel like we used to funnel beer out of and shoves it down your esophagus and dumps it into your stomach to make you eat it. That doesn't happen, does it? So you control what goes in your mouth, what you do, and what you do not do. That is the primary driver of physical health. Even two people, and they both get the same cancer at the same age, and it's caught at the exact same stage of cancer, the one who took better physical care of themselves prior to that is more likely to survive it and its treatment and go into remission. So even where you're dealt a hand by biology, life, genetics, circumstance, everything else you do makes you harder to kill, more resilient, and more able to come back and recover from those situations. That's all in your control. There's nothing that's not in your control. Yes, Stairmaster's intense. Somebody's talking about stair machines, right? It's the only cardio I like. There's two people talking about Stairmaster. Believe it or not, I love it too. It's a weird thing. My wife fucking hates Stairmaster machines. Just hates them. I love them. And I don't know what it is. I don't like running stairs or whatever. I think part of that is like I realize running the stairs, you down, and the older you get, the more you fear falling, and you should, right? But on a Stairmaster, you're not going anywhere. I freaking love Stairmasters. I think they are the second best cardio exercise you can get on a machine. Anybody want to guess? I'll come back to it. But does anybody want to guess what I think the number one is for cardio? Most intense cardio workout you can get on a machine. And it's not a new machine. They've been around forever. No guesses? We'll keep going. I'll come back to it. Because we're talking about the next one now. And if anybody gets it, no, not incline trip. Yeah, there it is. See? Assault bike. No, rowing. Rowing is the most total body, freaking most intense, knock your ass on your back, freaking machine type workout you can get. A good rowing machine. Not one of the cheap ones with pistons, like the mechanical, like chain drive fan, like they have in fitness centers. I mean, I don't know if anybody here knows what a number 10 coal shovel is, but rowing hard for 1 minute is like using a number 10 coal shovel to shovel rice coal hard for about 3 to 4 minutes, which will wind anybody, I promise you. And another thing about rowing and machines like Stairmasters and rowing, they're directly proportional to the effort you extend. So when someone says, well, I can just go on forever, well, then you're not pushing yourself enough, right? Like the people don't realize it because it looks like it's not, right? It's not the same. Like what I mean by that is imagine somebody's like, I can just do butterfly presses with dumbbells, like 1,000 of them. It's not even hard anymore. And you look at, he's got 2 1-pound dumbbells. Up the weight, dummy. So yeah, up the intensity with the Stairmaster or the rowing machine. Ellipticals are great too. I like, but Alice, tell me about the Stairmaster. It engages the body, I just feel, at a different way. But whatever you do, do it. Okay, now let's talk about financial health. That's your approach to wealth, investing, savings, and debt. You control all of that. You control all of that. Well, I have to have a certain amount of money I have to pay to live, like as far as rent or a mortgage. I agree, but you control what you buy or what you rent. Well, you know, I have to live somewhere I'm not going to die. I agree, but most people that say that, I could probably find you a way to save $100-$150 a month on that expense until you have more money. And then that money could be going to your long-term wealth development, which might also help you get to a much better place to live much quicker than living a little bit better in the now. Maybe. I don't know. You have to make that decision for yourself. That's just one aspect of it. But your investings, your savings, and how much debt you're willing to take on, in what form, these are all critical things that you get to decide. And in general, my rules to debt are as follows. I have no problem with productive debt. Productive debt is low-cost debt on an appreciating asset. Productive debt is debt leveraged against an appreciating asset for less than the asset appreciates at. Both of those make perfect sense to me. Almost every other form of debt does not. Well, so then where does student loan debt fall into this? You think Jack's going to go off on an all college sucks rant right now, don't you? Now, you must be new if you think that. No, I think that depends. If you are suited toward going to a university, if you have clear defined goals as a student, if you are getting a degree in a field that has growth, long-term career potential in front of it, then you are, in fact, buying an appreciating asset. Now, that asset has been devalued by a scam system already. I admit that. But you can be smart about it. Like, you can do your first 2 years at, like, a community college. And then you can transfer to a university. The only thing anybody looks at is the name on the final diploma. They're like, oh, he went to Arlington Junior College for 2 years. No, they say he graduated from University of Texas. That's how they look at that. Because the reason that asset is appreciating is if the degree is in something you're going to do, you're actually going to do it, and you actually do it, your experience along with the degree increases your value to an employer across time. So it makes sense. If you're going to get a degree in some generic bullshit, and you're going to end up with a job that didn't really need a degree, and you end up with a job that's not tied back to that degree, then you are paying debt and interest on a depreciating asset that's actually worth less across time, so then it's bad. See how it's not about an emotion in that situation. That's about logic, reason, and math. In this case, financial math, ROI calculations. Because what they've done is they've simplified the fact that that can be true into it's true for everybody. They went on a major marketing campaign, started in the 70s, ramped up in the 80s, and today a college degree on its own is worth perhaps 25% of what it was 40 years ago. Like, just the fact, like, nothing else is known, just this person has a degree and this person doesn't. The value is about 25% less than it would have been in, let's say, 1980. And I don't think anybody who's informed and honest can dispute that in any way, shape, or form. They devalue the degree, but it's still something with some value, and it still can increase in value if everything else is correct. This is how we should be judging all the financial decisions we make, all the spending decisions, all the debt-based decisions that we make. And all of those fall under what? Things that we control. And those of you like, but I have this really crippling debt, okay, from student loans, okay. And, you know, I took these debts on, you know, because my parents and my teachers and everybody's told me, I actually have sympathy for you. I've actually acknowledged that that is a problem in society that we helped create. However, I'm not in the extremist camp on either side. I'm not in the extremist camp of, fuck you. You took the loan. You paid the money back. Not my problem. No one owes you shit. Okay. I'm also not in the camp of, oh, my poor dear baby. Somebody should fix that problem for you. You still made a choice to do this, and you continuously made this choice over 4 or more years. You chose your field of study. You chose where you went to school. You chose how much money you were going to spend. You made those choices. You bear some responsibility, even if not all. But you're also 100% responsible for the situation you're in now as to getting out of it. Right? Everything is your responsibility in life. That's my little add-on for you today. So the key is knowing, though, what you can and you can't change. Whenever you get into any tight spot, and again, this really helps if you'll spend, and I don't care how you do it, whether it's my method or your own or whatever, if you will spend some time every day putting yourself in a completely peaceful state, even for 5 minutes. You don't have to sit around under a Bodhi tree with your legs crossed, with your fingers up, chanting Om, contemplating your navel, you know, and the goddess springing from the earth or whatever. You don't have to do that. But in some way, to put yourself in the state that you're in when everything just went right and you're not worried about what happens next. That's the best way I can define that state. To become familiar with that state and familiar with how to enter that state. And then when you get this question, this sucks. What can I do? What can I not do? You know, the whole feature and the pro and con thing. You're trying to make a decision. You sit down, you make a T on a piece of paper. Like, do I take this job? Pros, I get a raise. Con, have to work a lot more hours. Pro, learn new things. Con, it's a longer drive, right? Okay. Those are all an analysis tool, but the same formula can work with the same problems type situation. Okay, what do I control about this issue? I just found out we owe $2,500 on a bill I didn't know we had. Okay, what can I control? Why didn't we know we have it? Is it an error? I can try to find out of the legitimacy of the bill. Okay, if this, then that, right? If it turns out to be legitimate, I'm going to go through my budget and say, where can I grab money from? I can pay this lump sum from my savings. Do I really want to do that? Does that make sense right now? Can I contact the person that says I owe the money and see if I, like, is this now inflated because I didn't know it existed for some reason? I'm just making something up here. It could be anything. But, like, one thing I'd be like, well, wait a minute. Why do we owe this much money? How do we possibly end up into this creditor for this amount of money? Are there fines and interest or some shit on here? If I call them up, one of the things I have control over is I can contact them and say, look, there was some kind of an error here. I notice you have these fines and fees or whatever they are. I'll tell you what. How about this? How about you send me a letter agreeing to this so I have a paper trail, and I give you 65% of what you're asking for in full right now, today, and we wipe it clean. And when they come back and go, best I can do is 75%, deal. Right? Now, is that going to always work out? Like, fuck no, it's not always going to work that way. But you'll always find some angle on the things that you can proactively do. And when there is not much you can do other than accept it and deal with it, then that's what you're going to have to do anyway. Why not at least know once you get there, then, okay, I'm here because that's where I am. And then I have to adjust elsewhere in my life to deal with this one problem. But until we define clearly, I control this, I don't control this. And as much as I like influence in the model, in those situations, influence doesn't mean much at all. Because what I really control is I'm going to plead my case to this third party that I have some influence on. But all I control is pleading my case and how I do it. I don't really control the influence as to what they do with what I give them. But, you know, the answer to any question you don't ask is always no. So always ask for a little bit more than you want, part of the deal, right? And sometimes you'll get more than you want, even if you don't get everything you asked for. Next, you also have to know what you should change. So first we identify the things we can change, and out of the things we can change, what are the things we should change based on what that means we're giving up in other parts of our life and how it relates to this individual situation? It's actually pretty simple when you analyze it that way. Notice I use the word simple often. I use the word easy seldom, right? Ordering a product from Amazon is both simple and easy, yeah? Eating the right food for the next 2 weeks and beginning the habit of doing so is simple. It probably won't be easy. And the more you have to diverge from what your habits are, the more difficult it will be. The more difficult it will be. I'm going to throw a bonus in for you today on breaking a habit like that, because it goes right in with everything else we're talking about. Do you know how long it takes to do that? How long it takes to completely change a habit for the better? Depends on who you ask. There's a shitload of studies that say it takes 20, 21 days to change any habit forever. I think that's flawed. And the reason I find it to be flawed is it comes mainly from studies about things like we take all, like people with radical change that they have to accept. like people that lost a leg. And it generally takes those people about 21 days from the evaluation of those evaluating them to mentally fully accept this is my life now. And to get on with learning to deal with a prosthetic or whatever. The thing is, on day 22, they still have to deal with it. On day 30, they still have to deal with it. They can't make a decision to, oh, I'm not going to use prosthetics. I'm going to grow my leg back. And that skews the data. I think this happens in three phases of about 10 days each. And maybe it's more like, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's more like 6 weeks, like 2 week blocks. But the first piece of it is where you feel like you can't do it. It seems intolerable. Like I just, I'm not good. I hate doing this. I know I said I was going to work out every day this month. Is getting into my workout routine. Into the second day, I'm sore from the first day. I don't want to be here. I have to get out of bed early. I don't want to do this right. That's phase one. After about 10 days, somewhere in that, like, I'm going to say 8 to 14 day period, the new thing starts to derive some level of benefit and some level of dopamine hit and some level of positive feedback, and you start to actually look forward to it. And you enter phase two. And phase two is accepting this new thing as being really beneficial. It's no longer an idea. It's in motion. It's an action. You're doing it. Okay? And now it starts to feel better. And usually it's about 20 to 21 days, maybe 28 days, somewhere in that realm, that person really has established a new habit. But they haven't reinforced it. They haven't made it ingrained yet. And what often happens is, okay, now I'm just going to take a day off. I'm a cheat day. How do I phrase it? And then one cheat day becomes two, and it's very easy to regress the original habit because the new habit hasn't been fully established yet. It usually takes another 10 to 14 days, right? Like somewhere between 30 and 42 days is what I'm going to say. That last phase is complete where the new habit becomes bolted in and becomes now the default behavior. And now there's enough momentum to maintain it. And now we can take a day off here or there. So if you're struggling making any kind of change like that, what you need to know is those first two phases are going to be hard. They're going to have pushbacks. They're going to have setbacks. And even when you think you're there, you're not yet. And that's all normal. It's why when I talk to people about keto, paleo, primal, carnivore, anything in that range, I always talk about things like keto flu and how you initially don't feel good because most people are going to go through some discomfort, and if they don't expect it, then they think something's wrong and they quit. Yeah. So we want to know what we should change and how we should change it. And hopefully what I just gave you there as a bonus helps you with that. And then what to change to alter the impact of things that are truly unchangeable. That's the final stroke. That's the master stroke. Most people grok all the rest of it, and where they revert back to a form of toolbox fallacy is, yeah, but what are you going to do? Everybody has to deal with this. This is the mountain that will not move. There's always a move. It just isn't making the mountain go away. Sometimes we climb mountains. Sometimes we turn around and walk away from them. Sometimes we go around them. Sometimes we find a ridge line that doesn't quite go to the top so we can shortcut our way over them. Sometimes we blow a tunnel through them. Just don't know until we face the mountain. But there's always a move. And winners are always asking themselves what that move is. What does it look like? How would I implement it? Now, I didn't get a lot of comments today or questions, but I think that's more me. So if you are this person, if you're still here anyway in the live chat, you're this person, or you are this person. I'm going to do it again, just so if you weren't paying attention, you can. I've got something from this person, from this person and from this person. If you have something for me to answer or comment on and you did not see yourself show up on the screen, you have until I get done with these three to get your stuff in last call type style. All right. So Long Road Farm says, I finally caught a live. Here's some coffee money if you're into that sort of thing. I do love me some coffee, and I am into that sort of thing. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Just know anybody, like, I miss some of these, especially when I'm on my own. I don't have a guest. If you super chat me or anything like that with the YouTube system, it guarantees that I'll see it when I go do this at the end. Next up, Zakoons, I guess that's how you say that, comment, just sit and focus on your breath and refocus when you lose it, see what happens. And that's that mental state we were talking about. And that is what you do. That's part of how you train that into yourself. That just trains you to let go of things. That's kind of stage one of really a two-step process. But it is a great way to go. Don't worry about coming up with some om chant or something like that. Just focus on your breathing in and out and in and out and in and out. And don't get some, like, you know, chick that's like, let go of all your stress. Focus on your breathing. Don't listen to a recording like that, because then you're focusing on them. The deal is to learn to focus on nothing except your own breathing. Right? And then once you can do that, you'll start realizing, oh, I'm thinking about picking that pencil up that I dropped on the floor. Nope. It'll wait. In, out. Oh, now I'm thinking about that schedule. Nope. If you can do that for 2 to 3 minutes a day, it'll change everything. And once you're able to hold it, then I want you to try to build into your mindset complete peace. There's nothing else for me to be doing in the world right now other than this. I am peaceful. And then focus on that, how that feels, and train yourself to enter that state automatically without going through the breathing exercise. Just that destination where you're like, everything's good. And once you can do that, you guys just say you have problems sleeping, do that right before you go to bed. And whatever time you have to get up, your last thought before you throw your head to the pillow and let go, tomorrow I'm going to get up at insert time here, and it's going to be great. I can't wait up to get up tomorrow at 5 a.m., 4 a.m., 6 a.m., 7:30, whatever it is. I can't wait to get up at that time. Do you know why? Because in general, the way our minds work, the first thought we have when we wake up is tied directly to the last thought we allowed ourselves to have before we went into the realm of being unconscious. So if you want to get up excited about the day in the morning, and it may not work overnight, just do that. And if nothing else, once you do it and the alarm goes off, and it's, get your feet on the floor and repeat it to yourself. And even if you have to mumble and grumble your way to the coffee maker, eventually you'll actually program your mind that way. And your productivity from that alone will blow up. Next, 229 Mick, just curious, how's the office renovation coming? Are those rifles behind you Dorothy's, or are those from your office? Well, one of them is a BB gun. That's my grandson's right there. And then this is my 1022, which I keep around at all times in case things that are outside need to go, because it's something I can shoot here with minimal disturbance to the neighbors. So as far as the core of the correct question, it's not. There are just a ton of things in our lives right now that Dorothy and I decided actively are more important than that. But we're going to get back on it soon. Right now we got planning season. There's all kinds of shit going on. And we are going to hit that state where I don't want to spend a lot of time outside during the day because it's too friggin' hot. And that means I'm going to be inside and I'll put the construction work in. And it's gutted. It just needs to now be rebuilt. And I'm procrastinating a little bit. There's a few decisions that I have to make that I haven't made yet. Let's see. I got any more questions or comments? Okay. Zakoons, comment. By doing so, my focus anxiety has improved drastically in sleeping. I think he's talking about the breathing exercise. Yeah. It's funny how much people can change with their own actions that they don't realize, how much power we have that we deny. I've done this exercise with quite a few people that are miserable at work. What I tell those people to do is to write down every single thing they actually like about their job. Just make a list and keep it an ongoing list, like some kind of notebook that you have with you at all times or a digital list or whatever. Just anytime you realize, like, well, you know, I get a paycheck. Like, if nothing else, you like that, right? And, you know, whatever you can find that you like. And I challenge you to make that list at least 10 things. And then I challenge them to read that list to themselves 3 times a day. Read it first thing in the morning before they get in their car to go to work. Read it at lunch. And read it in the evening after dinner. The number one comment I get from people that do that is, you know, after a few months of doing it, you talk to them, like, how do you feel about your job? You know, it's a lot better. Wow, I guess that exercise worked. Well, no, I did it, and yeah, I don't know, maybe, but it just seems like all the other people there changed. Do you really think so? Did you really think that happened? That didn't happen. You changed. Your perspective changed, and therefore the way you interacted with other people changed. Now, I don't want people to go too far with that, because sometimes the reason they feel like their job sucks is it's not really going to get them what they want in life. They're not going to ever make enough money or get promoted into the type of position, or they really want to pursue something else. So don't let that steal from your motivation to find something better. But you might as well enjoy yourself where you are, because when you do, you will get the maximum benefit from that, including figuring out, you might figure out there's opportunities to do things with your work that you didn't ever see before. And the number one thing I tell people with that, if you see something you really think can make things better at work, and you really believe that it can, do it on your own time and give it to your work for free. Why should I do that? You shouldn't, and you shouldn't listen to me, and you should leave if that's you. HFSP, you are not ready for the level of shit we're talking about today if you just said that in your head. Unless you want to check yourself and then restate it and realize what a dumb thing. Because we all say things we don't mean, right? So if you said as a reaction, if you can now see why that was dumb, you can keep listening. Okay, the reason you should do it is because now when you go to whatever your leadership is in that work, do you know what they say? Oh, That is somebody who is worth investing in. Or they say, nah. And if they say, nah, now you know. Now they don't qualify for your shit anymore. Now you need to take your talent and go give it to somebody else. But that was the number one way people got development from me as a mentor when I worked in an office, is when I saw them stew extra when no one asked for it. Especially if they did it in their own time. I thought this was important enough, and I wasn't sure if it would work, and I didn't feel right spending company time doing this. So I took my own time and developed this, and I've implemented it in my own workflow, and it seems to be really beneficial. So now I'd like the opportunity to present it to you and maybe to our boss. What are they going to say? You're fired? Please, because you'll own the company, right? I just went from Widgets, Inc. to fucking Your Name, Inc. if they fired you for that. I mean, you just beg for that to happen, right? Like, the lawsuit that would come out of that would be incredible. You get fired for doing work on your own time to improve the situation at work that you didn't charge for. I've never heard of it happening, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, anybody that took it to a lawyer or an HR department before doing it would be like, yeah, don't do that shit. Anyway, hope you enjoyed today's show. Little announcement. Tomorrow will be an expert panel Q&A show for the week. How does that happen? That's supposed to be Thursday, Jack. Are you working on your taking a mental health day and taking Thursday off and just moving that show up a day to make your Wednesday easy? I'm not going to say I never thought about doing that from time to time. And, you know, maybe if I want to take one of them fishing trips I was talking about, I would do that. But I am not doing that this week. Not at all. Mike Melito from Good Shepherd Training, a member of the Expert Council, who you may, in fact, hear from tomorrow you will also hear from on Thursday. I have recently asked all the members of the expert council, especially members who have never been on for a standalone interview before, to please submit a guest form and come be on the show for a guest interview show. And Mike is just not able to do this on a Wednesday. So we, since he's an expert council member, we were accommodating to him. We will be interviewing him at 11:30 Thursday instead of Wednesday this week. And then I'm just flip-flopping those 2 days. That just made it a lot easier to do, just so you know that. So tomorrow will not be a live stream because we don't do live streams for expert panel, but we will have one more live stream this week for the total of three that we normally have. Got one more comment here before we close down. Lynn says, my significant other struggled with quitting smoking. Getting past that first 21 days is very difficult. After 6 months, the cravings still come and go. Drugs didn't work. Mental did. And that's a physical addiction. That is beyond a habit. And that is something. And when you are physically addicted to a substance, you can get off that substance for years. You can have no cravings. But the simple indulgence in that substance, if you were truly physically addicted, even a decade later, can sometimes completely reset that addiction. That's very important to know, because then you just undid all the work that you did. That is more about, there, no matter what anybody says, there is some level of straight up willpower in a situation like that. And nicotine in the form of smoking, in all forms, is addictive, but in the form of smoking might be the most addictive substance on the planet, except for sugar mixed with fat. That's the most addictive substance on the planet. That's why major brands, major corporations that are in the food business developed what's called the bliss point. Because if you hit the bliss point, the person literally cannot stop eating until they're completely full. Like physically, there is no more room if you hit it perfectly. And that is incredibly biologically and psychologically addictive. Incredibly so. And it's because we have a biological imperative to eat shit like that, because you do not find carbohydrates and fat at the same time in nature, except for very narrow windows. And they generally are on the shoulders of things like spring and fall. So we're either going into a season in a normal world without a Piggly Wiggly on every corner, a season where we're going to be in shortage. And then in the spring, where it occurs again on the other shoulder of summer, right? That's coming out of that shortage where we need to replenish. And that's why we biologically act that way. When the salmon are running and the berries are plentiful at the same time, we gorge. But now, thanks to Piggly Wiggly, Albertsons, Publix, etc., it's always the shoulders of spring and fall, and there's always an opportunity to gorge. And these companies are scientific chemistry companies, and they've dialed that in. And so the psychological and physiological addiction of like a potato chip fried in cheap plant seed oils with just the right amount of sweetness added to it, and then if you dip it in something like a sour cream onion dip, yeah, that's why when they say you can't eat just one, they ain't bullshitting. Remember that always, because there's something else you control. Maybe once you start eating it, it's very difficult, if not, you know, biochemically almost impossible to eat just one. But you're the one that made the decision to buy it from the store, put it in your home where it was available to you in the first place. And there are many things, even if they're not food related, that work exactly that way. Do not lead thyself into temptation. Wait, we got item of the day. Holy crap. Almost forgot, right? Item of the day today. So just real quick before we go, if you like the show and you want to support us, you can always do your online shopping starting at where? tspaz.com. You go to tspaz.com. You help us out no matter what you buy. Today's item of the day, a really simple, low-cost item, about $6 a pack, releasable cable ties. These are zip ties. Same kind of zip ties you probably use all the time. When I was in construction, if there were leftovers, you always took the bags home at the end of a job. Million uses for them. The difference is they have a little tab, and when you have it, you have something tied up with it and you want to take the tie off, you don't have to pull out your Kleins and snip it and throw it away. You push the tab in and you can remove it and you can reuse it. I have to say, of all the items on T-Spaz, if I only factored in how often do I use this thing on my property, this is maybe top one or two. It is definitely in a top five list. We use these for making temporary gates. We use them to change the level of lights over plants. We use them to fix all kinds of shit. I keep bundles of them in every vehicle I own, get a big handful of about 30 or 40 of them, take one and put it around it to hold them together, and throw it in your glove box. It's there if you need it. Tool bags, there's a bundle in every tool bag. I mean, there's the old redneck thing is if you can't fix it with duct tape, right? If you can't fix it with duct tape and tie wraps and baling wire, you either need a welding torch or a junkyard. Like, that's where you're at. Like, with rednecks, if you got those three things, you can probably fix just about anything. And these are incredibly versatile, and they're so inexpensive that if you go buy, like, regular ones that are not reusable at Home Depot or Lowe's, you probably spend more money. So check these things out. Remember, you can always help us out. Again, doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. You get the T-Spaz, you see all kinds of resources there and information, plus all the products that we have ever reviewed available alphabetical order. You can click on the top category and you can scroll through them and see all the things that we've reviewed there. We have all this available for you. And if you see it there, I spent my money on it. I recommend it because I spent my money on it. And if I had to buy something like it again, I would buy the thing again, or I won't recommend it to you. Take care, guys. Have a great day. Catch the Expert Show tomorrow, and I will be back for another live on Thursday with Mike Melito. We'll be talking about firearms and all sorts of things that are firearm related. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.